You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Screen Heroes. I am one of your three hosts, Ray. I am, of course, joined by my other two very handsome hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
What's up?
And tonight we are here to discuss the movie Hero. We started this new thing where we each pick a movie, and it's kind of a review. It's not really. So I discovered that we all have a lot of gaps in our movie knowledge, and since we're all huge cinephiles with varying tastes, we thought this was a great way to fill those gaps, or, you know, our holes.
Or we could call them retro reviews.
But they're not really reviews. Like,
also, it's not really fun.
to fill holes.
Yeah, filling holes is much more fun.
Yeah, let's face it.
So you, coming up with the idea, got to pick first.
Yeah. I do most of the scheduling here. I kind of just put stuff on there 6 months in advance, and, you know, a month before it happens, I'm like, are you guys cool with this? And you say yes or no. So,
to be fair, you do the majority of the scheduling. Next yes. In line is Disney. So,
yeah, Disney sets a lot of our schedule too. About 60% of it, I think.
Well, before we dive into our conversation about Hero.
Yes.
And you. Jet Li, I guess we should talk news. And we have a long list of things we probably won't touch on all of
They're all really small and inane.
Nothing really big happened this week.
I wouldn't say they're all inane.
I mean, they're probably big things for those people, but, you know, not so much.
I mean, some of these things are kind of interesting.
We should probably talk about those things instead of just arguing about whether they're inane or not.
These things may or may not be.
My favorite thing is Kevin Spacey's new movie made a total of $600.
Oh, 600. I heard its opening weekend was only 126.
Was that him buying tickets for his family to go see it?
He still has family?
I assume.
I mean, he has relatives.
Yeah, probably. You know. All right. So that's one news story.
So, James Gunn officially, it will not be directing Guardians 3. Disney has decided to confirm that they are not bringing him back or backpedaling or anything along those lines.
We knew they weren't going to. Disney does not do it.
So, you know, take from that what you will. However, I guess he did do a movie with Sony that's coming out this fall, and Sony still intends to release it, which, I mean, again, makes sense because they probably poured tens of millions of dollars into that movie and employed a bunch of people.
Right.
So they're going to, you know, try.
It's crazy to just throw it away.
Right. You know, it's just like Disney's announcement that any finished Fox movies will still premiere.
Right.
Like, why would you throw out tons of, you know, tens and hundreds of millions of dollars? It's just kind of silly. So that's, you know, that's still happening. Suicide Squad 2 is going to be a ways away. Turns out that's happening sometime in the distant future, and Will Smith is going to be very busy. So next year he has Gemini Man coming out, and then he will also be filming Bad Boys 3.
They could just write him out and put another character in.
Sure. And Bright 2 are the movies Will Smith will be doing. They're not going to take the two most popular characters in the film.
I don't know. Is Deadshot one of the two most popular characters? The two most highly paid actors, probably. But I don't know that makes him popular. All I see is his action figures warming pegs at stores.
Sure. The movie was not a big success, but people will go to the movie to see A-list stars, right?
I don't think people were like, oh man, Deadshot was so great in that movie.
Didn't say that. I said people want to see Will Smith.
You said most popular characters. I'm just saying I don't think that, you know, I think they could write it out of the film.
So bring
in another character to replace it.
I would imagine that most people saw Suicide Squad for one of three reasons. They're either big DC fans, they're Margot Robbie fans, or they're Will Smith fans.
I don't know about that.
There's some Venn diagram that overlaps those three things, right? But, you know, nobody went to see it for
Jai Courtney.
Who's the guy that played Slipknot?
I'm just saying.
Adam Beach.
I'm his biggest fan.
So Just
that clearly, anyway. That's why I don't even know his name.
All of his movies.
So the point all is,
his movie. Yes,
Suicide Squad and Joe Dirt.
Oh yeah, he wasn't Joe Dirt. Yeah.
So anyway, the point is, Will Smith is busy doing movies again, which makes me happy that he's doing a bunch of films. I'm really looking forward to Gemini Man. Chris Hemsworth has told everybody what he thinks of Thor: The Dark World.
Yeah.
He thought it was the same as we did.
Yeah. Meh.
Meh.
He actually went on to say, did you read the article?
Yes, I did.
He actually went on to say he liked the first Thor and thought it was great.
Yeah.
And the third Thor was great, and the second one was meh. That was like the whole quote was much more damning of the movie when you read it in context. Usually that's not the case.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I can kind of hear him say it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But
what are they going to do now? Fire him?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's
his character is going to have the most title movies probably of any other character, because they're probably not going to do an Iron Man 4.
He's the probably only not going to do another really Cap wants movie to renew his contract too.
Well, also his movies weren't really as successful as others until the third one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when his character kind of came into its own. So now they're like, well, we need two more movies from him probably because people like the character now. So
time for Beta Ray Bill, guys.
And we no, but as long as Thor's there, unless they're gonna do like a buddy cop, which I'd be there if Taika Waititi was gonna dress and was gonna direct that, I would be in like Flint on that bad boy.
Well, so yeah, so Chris Hemsworth, of course, he still wants to continue the character. And so
surprise.
Yeah, surprising nobody. Money. You know, especially if you've seen Ragnarok and Infinity War, I don't think it's super shocking to think that he's enjoying himself. So yeah. So that's that news. Other stuff we've got going on in the superhero world is the CW announced the big crossover event for the Arrowverse.
Also, they announced, you know, the days in which these shows are going to take place. So Flash is officially moved to Sundays.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't read that.
Arrow's on Mondays, and Supergirl is now on Tuesdays. So everybody's getting a day rearranged.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Legends of Tomorrow, did they say that?
I think Wednesdays.
Wednesdays?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, the network has said they want to have a DC show every day of the week. So they're just readjusting so they can, you know,
do that, yeah,
get that going. So maybe Batwoman premieres Fridays.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is not a death sentence on CW.
True.
Supernatural has been in that spot and has done just fine. So
now, if somehow they're able to pull this off and have it be like a mid-season launch of the show, which I don't expect happening, they could always piggyback it off another one for the first, you know, half season or whatever to get people
absolutely
interested, you know, have it premiere after Flash.
I feel like
or
it would
something
fit in best with Arrow, you know, like just kind of
most likely, yeah,
the tones are probably going to be very similar, I imagine.
Yeah,
versus Flash and
there's
Legends.
A couple of their other shows that are also ending. I think this is the last year for Jane the Virgin, so you know that's been really
iZombie
popular.
I don't know, is that going to be a thing still?
I don't know
which one.
The zombie one.
Yeah.
Oh, iZombie. I think iZombie was canceled, if I remember correctly, but don't quote me on that. I'm not sure.
It's never been kept
in that same kind of DC realm. They kind of pretend it's not a comic book adaptation, which is fine. I mean, the show is very popular, so whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So that's happening there, and then Doom Patrol, which is one of the DC spinoff shows coming to the DC Universe streaming platform, cast a new actor.
Brendan Fraser is going to be playing Robot Man.
I love Brendan Fraser, so
it's Fraser.
There's like a commercial or something that used to be on. He's like, it's Fraser, not Fraser. If you say Fraser, I'm going to come to your house and kill you or something like that. I remember.
Well, then if I keep saying it wrong, he'll show up. All right.
Okay.
And then
he definitely doesn't have better things to do until recently.
I'd like to tell him how great he is in his Scrubs guest starring role.
Really? That's what you pick? This man
come
is
on. He's been in Mummy.
National treasure.
And what's that
I
one
like
where,
him
he,
a lot.
Where he has wishes from the devil?
The Dazzle?
Yeah, I actually, that's a
so
guilty
good
pleasure of mine.
It's so much fun.
But I like a lot of his movies. I just really love his character on Scrubs. And
yeah.
I thought that he was really good on
but
that.
But you love
that's
every
all
character on Scrubs. That's not really saying much.
Every character on Scrubs.
Almost every character.
I love a lot of
you characters will buy every single Scrubs Funko Pop that comes
I will
out
not. I will not. I will not buy any.
Somebody will buy them for you.
That's probably
yeah, exactly.
I am not buying.
Somebody is sitting
am
right next to
me. I am cut off on Funko Pops. That's it. I'm not doing that anymore. So, has nothing to do with Scrubs. Okay, so rounding out the news here, Bond 25 lost its director. which I think
I didn't even know I had one.
Really, so. Only interests me, I think, at the yeah. table.
I'm not a James Bond fan.
Danny Boyle was lined up to be the director for Bond 25, with Daniel Craig reprising his role.
Danny Boyle has done Sunshine and
127 Hours. Slumdog.
I did like 127 Hours.
28 Days Later. Yeah. So they were really looking forward to having
still
him.
Still waiting on 28 Months Later.
Okay.
I like Contagion and like Breakout movies. They're sure. Fun.
Is it just going to keep exponentially increasing? 28 years later, 28 decades later, 28 centuries later. Eventually, it's going to be like after the Earth has died and zombies are just going to be floating in space.
They're
like this.
Not zombies.
Whatever.
They didn't reanimate.
Infected people are going to be floating around in space like this. And it. They're going to just bite each other when they happen to get close enough. Because,
I love it.
Yeah. They farted or something and it propelled them towards the other.
That's ridiculous.
So great.
Just saying. Can you fart in space? I don't know if that's a thing.
We should go to space and try this.
I know. I'm thinking that's
let
a good
let me know plan. How that goes.
We have that in the budget, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm yeah.
just going to call up Elon yeah. Musk.
We're only
all those Patreon payouts.
A million months on Patreon. Right. Anyway... Veronica Mars may be returning as a TV show on Hulu, which is pretty cool, starring Kristen Bell. She would be reprising her role.
I don't know what that is.
So Veronica Mars was a TV show.
She was a teenage detective.
So she's going to play a teenager?
No.
I imagine she's grown up.
Like Mom
How many
Mars.
Years ago is this?
So it was a little while ago. They did a Kickstarter film that actually did quite well and has really good reviews where she is older. It is that much time later. And so this would be a continuation of that. Show had 3 seasons, then they had the Kickstarter movie a couple of years ago. And then Hulu is looking to do this. So she's kind of busy right now doing The Good Place, which is an absolutely phenomenal show. So I'm hoping that she's able to do both, because I know Veronica Mars was kind of her... That's what kind of started her career as far as like public limelight is concerned.
And it's crazy, because I first knew her from Heroes. She played the electric... girl from season 2. And
see, I didn't see
her.
Season 2.
I think I only knew her from the sloth video
that's
on Ellen.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's the only thing I really knew her. When that went viral?
Comes from.
Yeah, exactly.
I see.
See, everybody knows the GIF because it pops up in your Twitter.
Right. Yeah, I like the GIF. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Anthony Hopkins did a modern day King Lear on Amazon, and I'm so excited about it because I'm such a nut for Shakespeare, and King Lear is the best play ever written. Fight me.
Okay.
Not you guys in particular.
Oh, yeah, I don't really fight very often anymore. I'm more of a lover than a fighter, so.
Yeah. Your girlfriend looks hot today, by the way.
I appreciate that. I'm sure she's happy to hear that.
I don't know. Sorry.
Were you moving on?
No.
Okay. Did you want to talk about his girlfriend?
No.
Yeah, that's where he was going.
I was talking about
go
plays.
Ahead, make a comment, Eric.
I was going to say, when he's waiting for Godot with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen is the greatest play ever made.
I am going to disagree with you.
Well, go ahead, Ryan.
There was a Daredevil photo from season 3 that released this last week, kind of hinting at the imposter storyline. It was a photo of Matt Murdock in his old black, like, vigilante suit around the corner seeing somebody in his red suit beating somebody up.
Interesting.
How
so dare they?
It's either the imposter storyline from the comic books where Kingpin hires somebody to dress up as Daredevil and go out and kill a bunch of people to ruin his name. Or Iron Fist is wearing the Daredevil suit. This is my secret hope. That's Iron Fist wearing the Daredevil suit. Because he thinks Matt's dead and he wants criminals to still be scared on the street and he knows he can't go out and do it.
Because Iron Fist isn't scary?
Well, because... I don't know. But, I mean, when did Daredevil's hand start glowing? Like, I feel like people are going to ask about that. I don't know.
Maybe he doesn't use it.
Maybe he doesn't.
Did you see the new photo where Punisher is wearing the
skull
vest?
Yes, the set photos. And it's, like, super bloody.
Yeah.
That got me pumped. You know, I love me some Punisher. Except the thing I don't love is they're bringing Jigsaw in this season. I was kind of hoping that they would skip a season after the way it ended and give us a different villain and give Jigsaw kind of his own time to ferment and maybe bring him in like at the very end
that's
as a hint. Because that's a huge Punisher villain.
It is.
You know, and he literally just had this happen to him. So some time to build up some residual rage would be nice. But
I forget that actor's last name. I know his first name's Ben. But he was just phenomenal, so I'm excited to see him back. I feel like the fact that his best work is Prince Caspian and
outside of Punisher, yeah.
in Narnia 2 is kind of unfair.
Yeah, and he really chewed up the scenery in his Jigsaw role. Like, he's good. I wanted them to let it ferment longer, but I'm not disappointed that they're bringing him in. It's going to be cool to see. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. And yeah, he did great for season one. So season two will be even better, I imagine.
All right. Is that it for news?
I think so.
Okay. Then let's get started.
Okay.
Okay. So Hero came out in 2002. And in China, it did really well. It was so popular that Quentin Tarantino decided that he was going to go to Miramax and ask them to release it here in America. They did, and it won its box office. Unfortunately, it won 2 years later, you know, not when it came out originally. It's a pretty simplistic film. It's only got six characters in it for the most part. Jet Li, of course, helms the film right there and plays a character called Nameless. So I picked this film because of how incredibly gorgeous it is. I like studying film, and I think this is a fantastic example of what draws me to film, and that's ultimately the visual aspects of it, what you can do with the camera and taking in all of your senses at once. So that's kind of why I chose this one. I do not want to smell my films.
No, we did that with It. I'm fine.
Yeah, it's really only, you know, certain senses.
Right. It's really just eyes and ears. And
yeah, you're not tasting it. Well, maybe popcorn, but that'd be about it.
I mean, you know, if you've got like a D-box seat and it's rumbling, you're feeling it, you know. And
well, you can, I'd say you could feel. Feel would be a fair thing, because it's not just tactile, you know, you're feeling inside.
We're also not in kindergarten trying to pass a test. There are more than five senses. I mean, there's balance and intuition, and
I tell people I have seven or eight senses easily. So
well, that's it. I have 32.
No, come on, guys, like the scientists have proven there are 23. Like,
is there 23?
Yeah,
like, I have no idea. Guys, I was just playing around. Come on. I don't have a sense of science.
What did you guys?
I don't believe in
so,
science.
So, all right. So, to your point about the visuals of the film. So,
What did you think of the film? This was your first time seeing it.
It was. Yeah, this was my first time seeing it. I am a Jet Li fan, but I missed this one. You know, unfortunately, when films have more generic titles, it's harder to find them sometimes and get references to them.
There are about 10 other films, approximately, out there named Hero.
Or the hero, or like,
yeah. Right, exactly. But I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a beautiful film. I guess we'll get into detail here. So your point about the visuals, I, for people who don't know, have some color blindness issues. I am color deficient, right? And so when a movie does things with color and I notice, it's a big deal for me. And Hero does some really cool stuff with just kind of monochromatic shots where everything is some tone of some color. And I just think that looks really cool. It's really pretty. And it just made me feel like everything in the movie was more purposeful than like your average American film. Mm-hmm. Right? Everything just seemed to have a specific purpose rather than it just being part of the runtime, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Ryan.
I liked it. I mean, I saw it when it first came out, but admittedly, that was, like you said, 2004. At that time in my life, I was still doing martial arts. I did, at one point, I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but I did martial arts for 11 or 12 years, and kind of because I loved kung fu movies and whatnot. And so I was seeing pretty much everything that came out in theaters related to that. I don't remember. I liked movies at that point, but I wasn't looking for deeper meaning or anything like that. Seeing it now, I can appreciate a lot more things about it. It's not my favorite Jet Li movie, and I think there's some movies that have since done things better than this movie did. But for the time period it came out, I think it was a very impressive piece. yeah, without digging into it too deep, that's how I felt.
That's fair.
So where do you want to start?
Let's dig into it really deep. This film is constantly on collections of best this or best that, usually on best martial arts scenes, fight scenes, especially the beginning with Jet Li and Donnie Yen. And
who I forgot was in this. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Their mental battle and the uniqueness of sword versus spear, something that we never see here in America. And it's also on popular lists for visuals, the monochromatic color as well. Color is always used very, well, it's not always used very purposeful, excuse me. In this case, it was incredibly purposeful. So as the story progresses, Nameless tells the king exactly how he defeated these three warriors, and each time a scene occurs, the color that it's portrayed in, the outfits they're wearing, the scenery, everything like that, can kind of tell you what's going on. When it's red between Flying Snow and Broken Sword, it's very passionate. It's not an intelligence scene. It's sex and death and just all around. So, you know, it's all very purposeful, every color, and it kind of just sets the mood.
Yeah, I found that the framing was a really big part of that too. It wasn't just the color, that things were just framed really well.
The composition.
It's a pet peeve of mine when things are cut off in a shot when they don't need to be. Like, I get it, like, sometimes there's no way of getting everything you want. But I just felt like everything was set up in such a way. There's all these really wide shots that give you all this amazing detail. Like, when they're in the Emperor's throne room, right? And, you know, Nameless is, like, he's 100 paces away is where he starts, right? And, you know, they're showing it from, like, the Emperor's perspective. And he's just way out there. But you get this beautiful wide shot where you get to see the entire throne room and all of this detail.
But it's the same wide shot even as it gets closer in. It is. Still from the Emperor's perspective. He's just closer.
But I find that really interesting, though, that you continue to get that shot, but it looks different every time he moves forward, right? And so it's very much the same perspective. It's what the Emperor is seeing, right? Rather than it just being some environmental shot or something like that.
The composition of this whole film is pretty brilliant as well. And I think my favorite example of it is the battle between Flying Snow and Moon in the yellow forest with all the leaves and everything. It was not just a really well choreographed fight. Every fight in here is really well choreographed, but, you know, just the way that Snow moves and coordinates with her surroundings, the composition is just very unique and telling.
The choreography is very, you know, it's in the style of, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where it's not...
Well, the same director also did House of Flying Daggers, so he is familiar with that kind of choreography as well as style.
It's not, like, ultra-realistic, you know, it's a little more fantasy aspects to it, and it just makes it look really interesting, because your main characters are basically superhuman in these fight scenes, right? You know, like in the first fight, there's some crazy stuff going on in there that just isn't really the most, you know, human actions in the world, but it looks super cool to watch that on screen. You know, the things that they do with the weapons at first, like, so the blades on the swords would, like, bend and wave and things like that. And at first that kind of threw me off. It looked a little fake. And then I started understanding what they were trying to do with that. And so it kind of just ended up being part of it for me.
I don't know. I disagree a little bit on the choreography, just because I have this pet peeve about my martial arts films that they aren't floaty and dancey and stuff like that. Because I don't think it looks cool. I think it pulls me out of the fight and makes me go, okay, this is clearly not meant to be something realistic. And that's fine. I mean, it didn't take that much away from the movie for me, but it did make me go, okay, it's going to be one of those movies. Because I like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon as a movie, but as a martial arts movie, I don't really like it as much, because I think that the scenes with Donnie Yen and Jet Li when they're doing the sword against the spear, or when Donnie Yen is fighting the guards. I thought those were good when they weren't flying around doing ridiculous, like hanging by their toes on it, like whatever. I thought the actual when it was actual choreography and not wire stuff was cool.
Did you guys notice that the wire work, the fantastical wire work, only occurred in the scenes that were lies?
I didn't pay attention to that much because it was distracting to me anyway, but...
That's interesting.
The scene where...
So, like, the on the lake and everything?
Yeah, the blue scene.
I didn't think that was supposed to be real. I guess I didn't capture that it was a lie. That's interesting. No, I did not notice that.
But, I mean, his 10-meter, like, instant gib before the water falls, that, I mean, that maybe that scene specifically wasn't realistic, but that technique was something he used later in the film. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know, I would debate that a little bit. I'm sure that it's mostly true, at least, but I guess, is it realistic that somebody can move 10 meters instantly?
You know, I think the idea is that we never actually get to see what the real move is, right? Because
we see him rush the Emperor.
Yeah.
Well, but we don't get the whole shot. He's just there, right? Okay. Is the point? The point is we're not really supposed to know how he does it.
Right. That's fair.
It's the MacGuffin. It's what's in the briefcase.
Yeah.
Right. Like we don't actually get to know that. But that's a really interesting point, though. That I definitely did not notice that. And that does make it kind of interesting for me because then it makes more sense that that's the choreography. If that's not what really happened, he can be fantastical because like the scene where he's, they're protecting the calligraphy school from all the arrows. Right. And you know, there's a million arrows that are flying through there and they're just like knocking them all away. And like these
somehow
giant
they're not hit by
stuff.
Any of them, but everybody else is. Yeah.
But I like the idea then that that's not, that didn't happen. Right, that's just this fantastical story. I like that. That makes more sense to me. Because the Emperor just wants to know what happened and Nameless has to come up with a story, right? Because it's not the truth, right? The whole thing is a ruse. And he needs to seem like he's larger than life to intimidate the Emperor if the truth does come out like it does at the end. You know, the Emperor is not so sure if Nameless is able to accomplish this or not. And part of that is the story.
He's not an emperor yet.
Sorry.
He's the king.
The king. My apologies.
So a lot of people, especially in China, didn't really like the film because they believed it had a political stance to it. And most Americans, that went right over our head because, you know, it's not 1776. But
I noticed that for sure.
Okay.
Maybe I'm not noticing the right one, but I definitely thought it was interesting that they have this whole conversation about why the king is doing this. And when you hear it out and it's done, he's given like a platform to have this logical statement about why he's doing what he's doing, as brutal as it is, but he says it in this kind of very even, level-headed way. It does lend a sense of legitimacy to what he was trying to do. And I thought that was an interesting stance for the movie to take. Because it humanizes him, right? It doesn't make him sound like he's a warmonger who wants to slaughter people. It sounds like he thinks he has everybody's best interest at heart, and he thinks he's doing the right thing and saving the most lives, right? So it does kind of make him seem more reasonable.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, autocracies turn people off.
Yeah. So if that's the political part that the people in China were thinking about, like I definitely noticed that. I thought that was interesting. Because the whole movie's not, right? The movie as a whole is just this story, right? It's about the story of this, you know, so-called champion and who comes from nowhere kind of thing. And it's almost like a hero's journey, kind of fast forwarded a bit. And then at the very end, he gets this whole platform to speak his mind. And that was an interesting departure.
So on your comment about all the different colors representing different things, I did think Absolutely. That outside of the colors, the elements used, water, fire, earth, in all these different fights, or maybe not all fights, but yeah, scenes. I thought that was an interesting use too. You don't see as much of that as like an environmental theme in movies.
Right.
On top of the color, it was just very multi-layered. And maybe that turned me off a little bit about the movie because I don't go into movies looking for a super deep meaning in general. I just want to be entertained, right? I'm not looking for political stances or things like that. It was a good movie. It was pretty. Like, there was a lot of things I liked about it. I did like the use of the elements and things like that. But at a certain point, when you're peeling back the onion and the onion never stops, you never get to the middle. You know, I don't know. I feel like, you know, maybe a little bit of a waste at a certain point. And we did get to the meaning of it. I just feel like there was a lot of layers to get through. And I was starting to wonder when I was going to get to the center of that onion or something edible.
I thought that the whole point of the film was to show that, you know, we're supposed to be on Nameless's side because he's the main character and he's fucking Jet Li and we all love Jet Li. But him and Long Sky and Flying Snow, they're just angry because they've lost their family. They don't have a plan afterwards. Even if the king dies, another king takes his place. Some other territory or province, whatever they're calling it, rises up and starts a war. So, you know, they don't have a better idea to put in place. They've concocted this plan to get to the king to assassinate him, and Broken Sword's the only one that sees that eventually the killing between these provinces will stop, and they just can't focus on that.
I do like movies that kind of turn the protagonist into the antagonist, or just kind of flips that on its head. We talked about Big Trouble in Little China, where you're watching the sidekick the whole time. In the position, like, he's framed as a hero, you know, but because he's the main character, but he's really a psychic. And in this movie, it was, you know, he was more or less the antagonist, or, you know, you weren't really sure for a while there, and he ended up doing the right thing. But, yeah, I do like that when a movie flips that, and that was interesting. I didn't remember anything about this movie, really, other than, like, bright colors and floaty dance fighting. So that was interesting, for sure.
So I really liked the twisting that happened on it. So yeah, for people who may not watch the show, I like the overly complicated stories and the complexity. I enjoy that type of stuff. And so when they go through all of this and he's supposed to be this amazing warrior who fought for his king and all of that, and you find out not even like at all, you know, and he's actually trying to assassinate him. I just thought that was super cool. I did not see that coming at all. I really didn't. And maybe it's just, you know, I wasn't really looking for a twist because a lot of the martial arts films are pretty straightforward, you know, so I wasn't anticipating a twist. But I really liked it. A lot of the times when I'm not anticipating a twist and you get one, it seems kind of lame or something like that. Like, you know.
Well, if you go into a movie, you're like, okay, what's the twist going to be? You know, and you're trying to figure it out before the twist happens. And in this one, you didn't really like to go in thinking there was going to be a twist, and so you didn't spend the time trying to figure out what it was. So when it happened, you know, kind of blindsided you.
In American films, some of those things are very obvious. You know, I think it's safe to say that American cinema was surprised by Sixth Sense and the actual twist at the end. But for a while, there was a rash of movies in the late 90s and early 2000s where that kind of thing happened every single time. So it was, you know, popular to try and figure it out within the first 10 minutes of the film and, you know, brag to your friends if you were right or not about it. But this one, I just let it play out by the 30, 45 minute section of the film.
Yeah, then you're going like, okay, something is going on. You know, we've heard two different versions of the story. Exactly. You're like, okay, there's something going on here.
And we see the Flying Snow and Broken Sword situation play out a total of 3 times, all very different from the other versions. And it's just now looking back on it, their names are incredibly important. You know, Broken Sword being like kind of symbolic for having a mission, and then that mission is no longer what you think it is. So, you know, it's not the same. You're not the same anymore. You've grown and you're different. Flying snow, like if snow is flying here in Kansas, it's a bad time. And she's just nothing but anger and death, and she just wants to rain down punishment for being wronged. And you know, Long Sky is the only one alive by the end of the film. Well, I guess Moon is alive as well, and you know, the skies are vast and endless vacuum kind of things, and he's just he's nothing at the end. You know, he's given up his swordsmanship, so he's just nothing.
I think part of the reason for me that I didn't necessarily look for a twist is that we did watch it, you know, with subtitles. I try to avoid dubbed films whenever possible, so I can get the original actors' voices and things like that. And it requires a little more work to watch a film that's that visually intense and read at the same time and keep up with everything that's going on and then try and think ahead on top of that. And I think that made it more difficult as well.
It's possible.
You know, because you know, these days, if you're watching a Marvel movie, I already know who all the characters are. I can guess what a lot of them are probably going to say in certain situations. You know,
if they haven't shown in the trailers already.
Or if they haven't shown in the trailers already, right? And so I'm not, you know, I'm not focused on minute details necessarily of the instant that something is happening. I'm trying to think ahead, like, what's going to happen next, right? In this, I never had that opportunity. So, like, I missed, like, the name thing. Didn't even really think about it because there was just so much going on that I was trying to pay attention to that went right by me.
Mm.
So, that's interesting.
Okay. I'm not really quite sure what to say.
So let's talk a bit about the fights. Do you have a particular fight that was your favorite or one that you thought was the most interesting?
No, I would say probably the one between Jet Li and Donnie Yen before the acrobatic crap started. I thought it was well choreographed. I really like when martial arts movies and a lot of Western martial arts movies don't use spears the way they actually were. And spears were made of waxwood, which is a flexible wood that like, so it whips, like that's a thing. And this movie utilized that to great effect. He had to deflect the spear tip with his foot once because it was going to curl down and hit him.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have a lot of respect when they actually are fairly authentic. And actually Jet Li is really good about that. He has several movies that use spears that are true, like waxwood spears or staffs. They did the same thing with staffs at the time, but yeah, that fight I thought was well choreographed. It's always a pleasure seeing Donnie Yen, and it's always a pleasure seeing Jet Li when they're really like into it. I mean, they're very fast. They do great work, and their choreography is very good. And they're both very skilled martial artists. So, yeah, I always enjoy watching those two.
Visually, I like that one a lot. I like the rain. I like the fact.
I like the music too. I always love it. Even like Kung Fu Hustle, which is kind of a joke, but
I love Kung Fu Hustle. The
music in the background, an old man playing music in the background.
So cool, yeah.
You know, that's always a good like ambience to have in a fight scene. I love like the like string instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that definitely had an effect for me too.
Well, because I felt like that played in with the shots, right? Because, you know, as I was saying before, all of the framing, the coloring, all that's very purposeful. And when you have an instrument like that where each individual note is always heard, again, everything's very purposeful. Every single note is important.
Even the string breaking as a non-note was important.
Exactly. You know, so I just feel like every aspect of the film kind of goes towards that, where if it's out there, if it's in a shot, there's some specific reason it's in that shot other than it just, well, you know, it was on set, you know, kind of thing. It just feels very, very purposeful. Mm-hmm. And that's just different. It's very refreshing for me because I watch a lot of just American films, and there's a lot of tropes and common patterns.
There's tropes in Chinese films as well. And this one's probably no different. It's just that there are very few directors out there, especially ones that we get to talk about, who every single thing in frame on that made it in the final edit was done for a reason. You know, we joke about how there's a lot of mistakes in the first Star Wars, you know, the shoe and the potato asteroids. And we've joked about all the poor edits in Avengers, how Steve Rogers is punching a punching bag with duct tape on it in this shot, and then you cut away and then it's back and there's a different punching bag. It just poor editing, things like that, like stuff. In America, we just look that over, you know. Not everybody is Tarantino, who pays attention to what color nail polish his actresses are wearing. But mm-hmm.
He's usually looking at toenail polish, to be fair.
I didn't specify where the polish was for a reason. But Zhang, on the other hand, who directed, like, everything in this film, was carefully combed over, and I can really appreciate that amount of effort that goes into your work. You know, mm-hmm. That deserves to be praised. Like, you know, this film has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, 85% on Metacritic. It's won 13 awards, nominated for 2 Academy Awards. Like, it was a big deal. And I think it deserves the recognition just because of how breathtaking it is.
So what was your favorite fight scene?
I think I can't really choose a favorite one. Most of them created some sort of emotion or interest that I had. I think the ones that I can recall the easiest are the green fights with the broken sword and flying snow against the king. That was a lot of fun.
That was super cool.
And because that happened in IRL, that didn't have any of the insane wire work. It was all very practically done and within normal humans' range of capabilities. I also love the fight, like I said earlier, between Flying Snow and Moon. That was just absolutely gorgeous. And that one was more fantastical. It definitely used the elements of air and earth to, I guess, arrange itself better.
Nice.
I don't know. You get the emotions in both of them. The yellow fight, let's call it, was full of revenge and agony and loss. And the green one was all about rage and just, I guess, finding himself, Broken Sword, just figuring things out in his head and figuring out what he loves and how he just wants to be with Flying Snow. And if he were to go after the king, he would have lost her.
Their death is pretty intense.
Their real one? Yeah.
Yeah, their real one.
Yeah, that was an interesting... I mean, the shot was good. It was pretty, but yeah, it was a rough scene.
Yeah. I mean, the concept reminded me a little bit of, you know, a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing where, you know, they kind of kill each other because they love each other kind of concept, and that wasn't what either of them had really intended. That just makes it, like, additionally sad because they were both trying to do their thing because of their love for the other one, and it ends up getting both of them killed in the end of it, which is pretty sad, actually. And so when you think about the end of the movie, like, they're like the king gets to live and he gets to keep doing what he's doing, and our three main characters are dead, and it's kind of tragic. It's a pretty tragic story at the end of it.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah.
It didn't have a happy ending.
No, again, something that you kind of expect in American film, right, is the happy ending, and people don't like it when there isn't one. This definitely, you know, doesn't have the happy ending. I guess we didn't really do a spoiler warning before this, but it was 16 years ago, yeah, so.
Come on.
But
the whole point was to watch the movie before seeing this. And having an elevated discussion here, we're not talking about whether or not the film was good. We've already said, like, the film is a good film.
What did you guys think of the after credits scene with Thanos? when he gets all the weapons. I'll do it myself.
I mean, I preferred the one where Matthew Broderick showed up in a robe. I just thought that was super weird.
Yeah, it didn't really fit in. I thought the Thanos one was much more entertaining.
One interesting little note is James Hong was the voice of the king in the dubbed version, the English dubbed version of the film, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Did you watch the dubbed version?
No.
No.
No. We didn't either. But I was looking through the credits to get everybody's names down and stuff, and I saw his. I was like, I don't remember seeing him in the movie, and it's because he just voiced... IMDb says he voices the Emperor, which is why I kept calling the character the Emperor. But, yeah.
I guess by the end he is.
So, yeah, I mean, kind of. But it was interesting because, you know, my China history is pretty weak, and so I wasn't sure how...
It's because we're American, and we learn very little about what happened in the East, ever. Like, we get some European history, some.
To be fair, I'm betting that, like, they don't really go deep into American history in China, either. I mean, maybe they do.
Maybe.
Hit the big stuff, but...
I know a lot of other countries get more information about us than we do of them.
We also have much less history in America.
That's true. That is definitely true. Yeah. All of this took place long before this was a country. But my point was more that I wasn't anticipating this being based on any historical stuff that actually happened. You know, obviously, you know, these main characters that we follow, they were not. You know, Nameless wasn't, you know, necessarily real, but the story of what the king was doing, what the emperor was doing, it was, you know, based somewhat on reality, and I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, not something I usually anticipate from, you know, the more martial arts focused films, you know.
Especially when they have such a fantastical, whimsical outlook to it. The color palette as well as the exaggerated fighting styles doesn't necessarily lend itself to based on real events.
Yeah, I mean, I think it distances itself from normal martial arts movies with that, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it was cool. I thought it was really interesting. I found myself just, like, constantly just staring at it, never really looking away at any time, when I watch a movie at home, I tend to do.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we've got a dog, and I pay attention to the dog or something like that, and I was just, like, completely in the zone watching this one. Again, just...
It's compelling.
Visually, is just super captivating for me. And different. It's very different from what we normally watch. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, for those who follow the show, you know, we tend to focus on the major blockbuster stuff. Which one could argue has a bit of a formula to it.
And I guess this was a blockbuster. If it took its weekends and made, you know, triple its budget back, then I guess it would qualify. But I just don't remember hearing or seeing...
I remember seeing previews for it, for sure. But I was also seeing other martial arts movies at the time, so not too surprising.
Yeah, I mean, the term blockbuster, I guess, kind of has a less, you know, dictionary definition now than it probably should, right? Because, like, you know, you look at, you know, this weekend, Crazy Rich Asians won the weekend with over $30 million, which you know, basically,
what would you call it, a blockbuster?
Well, I mean, it made its budget back.
Sure. When I think blockbuster, I guess I mean big studio movies. It's usually
right, and that's what I'm
for blockbuster.
Right, like The Meg was supposed to be a big blockbuster, right? Or Jurassic World 2, you know, Fallen Kingdom. That's a blockbuster.
I guess movies like these change the scope of what a blockbuster is. You know, a blockbuster is guaranteed to make back its budget and more than that within the first day, let alone the first weekend. And some of them are failing pretty hard, and some of them are surprising us. Crazy Rich Asians once again proves that representation matters. And
speaking of James Hong, he's in that.
Yeah.
So
A
lot of people are in that, yes. But I think he's the only one from this movie who's in it. But yeah, I mean, a blockbuster is probably a film that's expected to make $500 million worldwide, right? And, you know.
I just think that our definition of blockbuster should be a bit more lenient, because the movies that we expect to be don't always end up being blockbusters.
Yeah. Well, what else? What else can we touch on for Hero?
You didn't talk about your favorite fight scene, I don't
think. Oh, I didn't. You're right. So my favorite fight scene is actually the one on the lake.
Yeah, it was really pretty.
Just because I thought it was super interesting. I've never seen a fight scene quite like that before. As much, like, yeah, I've seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and other films that have that type of choreography in it, and super, super beautiful. But on the water, you know.
That was almost ballet-like.
Yes. Yeah. And I really just, I liked when, like, that speck of water gets on her face, that, like, the whole fight has to kind of stop for a second. And I just thought it was really interesting. I've never seen something so, quite like that.
A fun fact, in America, when they want to have a woman do martial arts, they usually teach her not just martial arts, but they also incorporate ballet to make it look more feminine. And it's actually gotten to the point where it's on my nerves now, because we can't just do regular fighting styles. We also have to dance at the same time. Kind of spearheaded by, again, Joss Whedon, who thinks he's a feminist and sometimes is and sometimes not. But River Tam did this a lot in Serenity. She didn't really fight a lot on Firefly, but definitely a lot in Serenity. And Gamora does this, but it was interesting and a completely welcome change in my world to see two men fight with some ballet poise to it. Because it never happens with men. So it was very interesting to see them, like, on point. Literal on point.
Fair enough. How did you guys feel about Nameless dying at the end, the way he died and all that? Did you anticipate that happening after he left the king alive?
Yeah. I mean, it's the law, so yeah. I mean, if he just decides that he doesn't have to do the law, then that causes all kinds of other problems.
Oh, yeah, no, I guess I just kind of, maybe because it was Jet Li, I expected him to somehow, like, escape.
So you could do the second sequel, Hero 2, Electric Boogaloo?
No, but, you know, like, look, let's face it.
Hero 2, Men in Tights.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen far more American films than I have, you know, Chinese films, right? And so I'm, you know, a little more used to the hero, you know, getting away kind of thing. And part of me thought that based on the Jet Li character, Nameless, and his abilities at getting out of there, I feel like, you know, maybe he should have put up a little bit more of a fight.
So here's why I knew it wasn't going to go down like that. And this goes back to the character names.
Okay.
If he is Nameless and he lives, he will have a name. Heroes, legends, they get remembered.
Mm.
He wouldn't stay Nameless. Like, there would be something about the man who almost killed the emperor, the king, and, you know, he would be written about in textbooks and legends and things like that. So it would kind of take away from the point of the character to be an everyman.
That's interesting. I had not considered that.
Well, I'm smarter than you.
Okay.
It was, for me, I don't know how familiar you are with Jet Li's filmography, but he did a movie called Fearless, which is one of my favorite Jet Li movies.
It is good.
And he dies in the end of that one too. And it's
spoiler alert.
Yeah, I mean it's you kind of know that from the beginning based on where it's going, because it kind of bookends. Like, you see part of what's going on in the end in the beginning, and then it goes back in time and plays up to that point.
I mean, he dies at the end of Lethal Weapon 4.
It's true, but it's a little bit different. He wasn't the protagonist in that one, but. So I mean,
well,
it's
he does
not
die in the Expendables.
His historical, more historic type movies about, like, the history of China, they seem like he dies in most of those that he does, or at least in the couple that I've seen. So, I mean, and I know that one came out after Hero, but because I've seen that movie more, and, you know, it was kind of expected for me that he was going to die. It wasn't too surprising.
Fair enough.
To be fair, Fearless does have some of that kind of dance fighting too, but not nearly as much. And it's much easier to ignore in that movie for me personally. But okay. If you haven't seen that, you really should. It's a really great, really great movie. I'm not going to pick it for my film, my whole though.
Fair enough.
Got too many other movies.
Any final thoughts on Hero before we wrap things up?
No. It's grown to be one of my favorite films, and it's going to make the top 100 somewhere probably in the 2030 range. I could rewatch that tonight. Since we watched it, I've had the urge to watch it like four more times. So,
but you couldn't because I took it.
That's true. Yeah.
You brought it back though.
I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be doing this in about a month again for the same segment. I'm picking the movie.
You picked something completely different.
I did. Yeah, which I thought we were theming these, but apparently not.
No.
No one told me we were theming them. The theme is one of the three of us has to have not seen it. That's the theme.
Okay.
My goal was to pick, like, classically good movies rated all across the board, top 10 lists.
And, that's not where I was going.
I get that either.
All right, so I'm not going to tell anybody what movie I'm doing yet because I'm sounding more and more like I should change it. So.
No, you don't have to. You picked this movie. It's fine.
We'll talk about it another time.
He picked the last one.
No, I have not picked anything yet. I have not picked anything.
Yes, you did. It's yet.
Well, we have to give our audience time to watch it before we.
You picked the last Starfighter. You have to tell them ahead
of
time.
Fine. Yes, I picked the last Starfighter.
Why are you ashamed of it?
No, I'm not ashamed of it. It just
seem annoyed.
Seems very defensive.
A little bit.
Because I was asked to pick a movie, and then all these rules came later.
No, there are no rules. That was my thinking. Okay. You know,
well,
that's the movie she's going to pick.
We'll talk about it.
It's going to be movies you pick.
We'll talk about the last Starfighter in about a month. Okay? So if you haven't seen it, or it's been a while since you've seen it, go ahead and rewatch it, and we'll be talking about that in about a month. Next week, we are reviewing Cloak and Dagger. So next week, we are...
We might push this one more time. I haven't gotten through it. It is a tough show.
Yeah, it is. I can't binge it at all. No. I can watch like two episodes, maybe.
It's good, but it is serious as hell. And like in the first episode, there's...
We can't push it too far though, because then Iron Fist is going to be out and we have to like review
that
within like a week.
But we can binge
that
one. Like there's not a rape attempt and drug use.
We don't know. Maybe there is.
So we don't know.
In one episode, like spread out your trauma, please, for me.
Wow. Jesus. All right, so we might be reviewing Cloak and Dagger season one next week. You'll have to tune in to find out. Ryan, where can people find you?
On the internet.
Awesome. Ray, how about you?
Oh, same. No, I'm Siren Ray.
Yeah, you need to promote things. Yeah. I don't need to promote things as much.
I am
right
a cosplayer. Now. I am currently doing a Kickstarter. Please, for God's sake, just subscribe to it. This is embarrassing, people. Kickstarter.com, search Siren Ray because they make the URLs long as hell and you don't want me to just say all that. SirynRae. Thank you, Siren Ray.
Give her your money. And get digital money. Or real things.
And I am the Star Trek dude on Twitter. You can also find me on Red Shirts and Runabouts, which is our Star Trek show here on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Woo!
You can find us, Screen Heroes, on the Heroes Podcast Network at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and here on Twitch, twitch.tv/heroespodcasts. We do this live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, and you can chat with us, and we will talk to you in that chat. So thank you to everybody who joined us. We will catch you guys next week.
Good day.
I said good day.